This is a Social Storytellers podcast.
Welcome to We Are the Watchers. Tom. And Leah. Watchers.
Welcome to We Are the Watchers, episode 103. Tom, top of the day to you.
Hello.
Hola. ¿Cómo estás? How's it going?
Okay.
We'll be talking about a lot of things. I'm just going to give you a heads up at the beginning.
Okay.
Because you know sometimes like I know that you're always open to quizzes. Mm. But you know they're going to be about movies or TV shows. Mm. It's a little bit different today. It's a gaming one. So it's about video games.
All right.
Just so you know.
I'm open to it.
Get your headspace. Yeah, get your right headspace. I want to talk about some hilarious things that happen in The Good Place.
Yes.
I also am pretty keen to discuss what Sean Bean will be up to next. You know, the actor that dies in everything he does.
I was going to say probably losing a head or
something. He's been cast in something. Mm. So we might discuss how we think he's going to die.
All right.
That's coming up soon, as well as a bit of Walking Dead chat.
Yeah. Nice.
And some watching suggestions.
And some watching.
Of course.
The huge.
Do you want to get into the news first?
Sure. Let's do it.
All right. What have you got?
So I've got a mixed bag of stuff, but they're all themed around some stuff.
Cool.
So I want to dive in first with some theme parky stuff. Firstly, a movie about a theme park thing, which this sounds really up my alley. There's a movie coming. I don't know when it'll be out. They haven't said even when it's being filmed and stuff yet, but it's called Wally's Wonderland and stars Nicolas Cage.
Mm.
He's the janitor at a evil amusement park that he gets locked in at night and it comes to life and the animatronics start attacking and trying to kill him.
If they get the tone right, this is going to be hilarious.
Yep. And I can see full Nicolas Cage going full Nicolas Cage.
He's aware of the fact that he can Nicolas Cage things.
I'm already excited for that movie Primal, which comes out in a few weeks, of him versus, I think, a giant cat or something on a boat.
Look, it's
Nicolas big game
Cage.
Hunter. Yeah. Exactly. And this, him, it sounds a lot like Five Nights at Freddy's.
Oh, yeah. That
it would be that type of thing.
They've
taken a long time to get that into development. So maybe this is a snooze you lose case.
I wonder if they are, they may not be because this is so forward thinking, but if they're trying to create what fans will then make a cult Nicolas Cage classic.
Oh, it feels like it's being reverse engineered for sure.
Yeah, you reckon?
Yeah, they said that there's no one they were going to cast other than him.
Okay, well then.
So.
Yeah, because that was one of my immediate things. I'm like, is that?
I think it's built around him. Like it sounds like a thing that anyone else starring in that film, we probably wouldn't be talking about it right now.
Yeah, like you can't really. It'd be such a different take if it was someone like Tom Hanks.
Oh, I'd watch it if it was like Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah, he'd be good.
There's some people I can see doing an interesting take, but no one I can see doing as interesting take as Nicolas Cage.
It's got to be a little. You've got to be, as the actor, you've got to be a bit woke.
Yeah, he's self-aware enough to know that people are going to eat this shit up.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Totally. Well, that sounds interesting.
It does. I'm down with that. More amusement park stuff. There's a life-size Godzilla attraction coming to Japan. And it's not Godzilla out of the ground, but it's meant to be that he's just had a bomb or something dropped on him and he's currently trapped within rubble. And so his full-size head and part of neck is blasting out of the ground. This has gone through a few Google Translates and stuff, so it might not be quite all right, but it sounds like you might get to ride a zip line into his gaping maw.
Oh, yeah.
How cool would that be? So it'd be like popcorn chicken for Godzilla.
Do you know, I really also want the music just to have one song on loop, which is the Jamiroquai song.
Deeper Underground.
Yeah, from the Godzilla movie. So you just go, I'm going deeper underground as you're on the sky. Flying fox.
Uh-huh. I'm really into this idea.
So this is going to be in Tokyo? Or?
I believe so, yes.
Okay.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
Yeah.
Coming to free-to-air TV this summer, a simpler time. No social media, no smartphones, no on-demand television. Could 2019 kids survive? Let's find out. We have bought the old Big Brother house and have restored it to its original 2001 glory. A dozen 12-year-olds will be locked inside with nothing to do but interact with each other, face to face. The only link to the outside world is email using 2001 dial-up speeds. Better grab a book or two, kids. You'll be able to get through a whole chapter while you wait for a single page to load. Weekly movie night challenges will test contestants' patience as we see who can last through a whole screening of films like Moulin Rouge, Swordfish, and Vanilla Sky. Who will win Big Brother? Whoever lasts the longest in the toughest of tough 2001 conditions.
Look, this is just a little more. We're getting super close to Mandalorian coming out.
We are.
Just a little taster of one of the characters. So, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Ming-Na Wen.
Yeah, that's right, from Mulan as well. So she's playing an assassin called Fennec Shand.
Mm.
And she said that her character's tricky, and yet she's able to maneuver and survive and be stealthy.
So she's very Mulan.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
She was Mulan as well.
She was Mulan. Yeah. So she's going to be. What I like about this is you don't know too much about this character.
Sure.
But.
We don't know too much about any of the characters.
But I like that because you don't know if they're good. You don't know if they're bad. You don't know if they teeter between both. You don't know if they've got their own interests always.
Good old scum and villainy.
Yeah, exactly. And I kind of, this is what I want out of Mandalorian is for characters like this to constantly be going back and forth.
Yeah.
Like you're never really sure whose side they're on. I guess it's like the best quote I could think of was from the movie Dick Tracy, where Madonna is Breathless Mahoney, I think.
Uh-huh.
And I'm pretty sure it's Dick Tracy says to her, "Whose side are you on?" And she says, "The side I'm always on, my own. I'm not on the good, bad, just I'm my own." And those are the kind of characters that you want in this world.
We've had more than enough stories about the very good and very bad in the Star Wars universe. Let's live with the grey. If it's not
stealthy and agile.
That's it. If it's not going to be Force-related, then we don't need to mess around with the pure and the evil.
It's not what it's about. And these people can, these characters can be double-crossing each other all the time.
Just about survival.
Yeah. Hmm. So it makes me more excited. It's very soon as well. Like, we're in November.
Yeah.
It's crazy how soon it is.
I'm starting to see first reviews for a couple of the Disney Plus shows.
Is it making you more excited? I mean, I know you're already going to get it.
Yeah. But yeah. When I say reviews, they're reviews for, like, Amazing World of Jeff Goldblum and Imagineering.
Yeah, that one sounds interesting for sure. What else have you got?
So I've got two Lego stories for you.
Mm.
I know you enjoy them. Mm. Lego Masters we've had in the UK and we've had a series here in Australia as well.
Yeah, Hamish Blake was the host for the one in Australia.
That's right. And we've known that the US are getting one as well. It's going to be produced or executive produced by Brad Pitt's company.
That's right. Yeah.
And they've hired Will Arnett to host, which is perfect.
That's a good choice. Yeah, that's
really
good.
He's already Lego Batman.
He is already Lego Batman, but he's also got the right kind of personality and on-screen charm for this.
Very much so. And I don't see him rolling out any of the BoJack Horseman.
No.
You know,
no.
I think the cynicism will be
very
be tightly
toned down.
Wound
yeah,
down.
Absolutely.
I think that's awesome.
That's a good pick. I'm happy with that.
Yes. So no news exactly as to when that's going to hit screens, but if they've hired him in the Australian one, they announced Hamish joining the cast not long before they started filming the first season. Not before it went out, but the filming of it. So perhaps they could be filming before Christmas.
Yeah, potentially they could end up getting it mid-January if they're lucky.
Yep.
I don't know. It kind of – see, in Australia, mid-January means everyone's on holidays, don't even bother. But I know that that's not the case in other parts of the world.
Yeah, a lot of shows tend to come back in maybe the last week of January, week before that. They take the few weeks off because there's less ratings periods and stuff. But yeah, you want to ramp up for the end of January because February's a ratings month.
And if you're a new show.
It's very important.
But you've also got Lego behind you.
Yeah, they'll be right.
Yeah. And what was the other Lego story?
So this is a big story and it's not being talked about too much because it's all backroom dealings and this sort of stuff.
Okay.
But basically, in about 2005, Lego was really struggling financially. and they sold off Legoland and a lot of their physical assets and that sort of stuff to a company called Merlin, who are one of the biggest entertainment providers around the world.
Good name for an entertainment provider.
Very much so. English company. And they own Madame Tussauds. They own the Sea Life Aquarium chain, of which Sydney has one. Mm-hmm. Melbourne has one. Pretty much a lot of the aquariums got bought up by them. Merlin owns so much stuff everywhere, entertainment stuff. So Merlin's been struggling the last few years, whereas Lego has done fantastically. And Lego might be about to buy Merlin. So it means that they get all their physical assets back and they have complete control of the Legoland franchises again. But I don't know what it means for the opposite way around of what Lego owning Madame Tussauds and
Well, I'm already thinking about sea life, right? Those kind of aquariums are perfect for families to go to.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if also they make Lego underwater worlds in the tanks with the sea life.
That's already a big part of the Legoland properties, is a lot of them have a ride that you are journeying to Atlantis or something like that, where you're
such
in a submarine.
A good idea.
It just works.
Yeah.
So I can see some integration that way and sort of stuff. But in terms of that's a big deal, especially because Lego Merlin is a publicly floated company.
Okay.
And so it is at the whims of shareholders.
Yep.
Whereas Lego has shareholders and all this sort of stuff, but is a lot more tightly controlled. Mm-hmm. And Lego is about long-term growth, whereas when you're dictated by shareholders, it's all about immediate returns.
Yeah, you need to make sure that they're getting their money.
And that has affected the quality of some of the aquariums and this sort of stuff. They look beautiful and very bright and this sort of stuff, but they're all very samey.
So there's no reason to go back, you mean?
Well, it's not so much to go back. It's just,
if you're on holidays, say you're on holidays and you've gone to Sydney and then you've also gone to Amsterdam. I don't know if there's one there, but Amsterdam, and they're exactly the same. You're like, well,
correct,
I'm not going to go to the, yeah. It's,
they have, not generic, but they have theming, block theming. Every single one will have a Bay of Rays.
Right.
Every single one will have a shipwrecked galleon, all this sort of stuff. Mm. And it's not bad. It's really good when it's your local aquarium.
But also most people go to those kind of things when they're on holidays.
That's right. Mm. And it's a weird tourism thing where aquariums have generally aimed at locals. Zoos do the same thing of you get most of your business through the locals, even though there's a perception from the locals it's the tourists bringing it in. Theme parks, it's generally the other way around. So it'll be interesting to see how this affects and shakes things out. It may not happen.
Yeah, that's true.
It'd be a lot of money.
I was going to say, I couldn't imagine this being something cheap that Lego would buy.
No.
And if they're into long-term things, they have to have seen or foreseen a long-term interest.
It wouldn't surprise me if their intention is to get all the Lego stuff back and then potentially sell off some of the other things, some of the assets they're not as keen on.
Yeah.
They're very protective of their brand and IP and this sort of stuff. And it's very odd that the Lego lands are run by a different company. So if the opportunity comes for taking back, it makes a lot of sense. It's going to create a lot more synergy of, quicker turnarounds.
Less to-ing and fro-ing.
And it took a long time to get any presence for the Lego movie in the Legoland parks because it wasn't being driven by Lego corporate, all this sort of stuff.
Yeah,
so
that's
thing. Yeah, they can be a lot more timely with these sorts of things. Mm. And I think the other part that may come into play is that Merlin owns a lot of like 4D cinema or that sort of cinema experience, and Legoland already has lots of 4D cinema and films.
Mm.
That's a whole, you know, other sets of assets they can run their content on.
Makes
and charge
sense.
Money for.
Speaking of people who are charging money, I just wonder how much. I mean, I'm going to touch on this. We'll probably have a bit of a chat about it a little later. But Game of Thrones, Star Wars, Netflix deals for what they are affectionately known as the 2Ds.
Yeah,
you know, $250 million I think is the deal with Netflix for those two guys. I know that Sandra Bullock has done a movie with Netflix, which everybody watched. Did you end up watching it? Or you knew enough about it?
Couldn't watch it. I was too scared.
Bird Box, yeah. So she's also doing another movie for them. Mm. So I just wonder how much money that deal is. I mean, she's a big name.
She's a big name. She's a
huge name. We don't know the name of it yet, but it's based on an English program from a miniseries from 2009 called Unforgiven. It's a drama about life after prison. So she plays a woman who's gotten out of jail after serving time for some sort of violent crime. I don't know what it is. So she
Did she steal someone's identity?
Maybe. Revenge movie it is. She tries to, you know, re-enter society and people are not willing to forgive her for the past. Like I said, it's very early. We don't know what it is, but this is the second movie she's doing with Netflix. I wonder how many movies are in the deal that she's made with them. And
because Adam Sandler lost down
multi-films.
That's what I was going to
say, Adam Sandler, yeah.
But maybe she's just doing
maybe
per
she's
film.
Doing per film, or maybe it's a three per I don't know. Very early days, I don't even think they've started doing anything about it. But it's interesting to see that the next movie that we know of that Sandra Bullock is doing is not going to be at the movies.
Yeah.
It's on Netflix again. Interesting. This is a big. This is Academy Award-winning people who are now moving over to streaming.
It's very cool.
Because we don't have to leave the house.
It's very clever on her part if she can position herself as Netflix's biggest star. Because Adam Sandler held that title for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not the easiest person to knock off that perch.
He's got a huge back catalogue and a whole lot of fans.
And a whole lot of friends willing to drop what they're doing to come and make films with him.
That's true.
He clearly, as much as his stuff is not considered high art or whatever, he clearly looks after his people because there are people that have been working with him for 25 years and show up for anything
else. I was going to say there are people that you know are going to be in his movies.
Rob Schneider.
Exactly.
We laugh at that, but there's a tinge of jealousy in there.
Of course.
Like, that guy made it to the top and took all his friends with him and kept them there.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
It's very awesome.
So if Sandy can get that going.
Mm-hmm.
She loves working with very interesting directors and trying out new stuff. So she can create herself as a bit of a Netflix aorta.
Mm-hmm.
Aorta is the thing in your heart. Yeah. Auteur. I can't say it properly. A-U-T-E-U-R.
Because you're trying to say a French word and
auteur.
We're Australian. It's too difficult.
Imagine I'm doing a French accent version of the word author.
Yeah.
Auteur.
Yeah, right. Perfect. No, not otter. Don't get that confused.
No.
Another way of looking at this is that Sandra Bullock, she's a huge star. Academy Award winner. But in Hollywood, she's also a lady of a particular age.
This is true.
The curse of a woman who hits 40 in Hollywood, suddenly the opportunities that are presented to them, they either have to do it themselves.
Or be Meryl Streep.
That's right, exactly. And you've seen people like Reese Witherspoon do this. She's got her own production company. She's now doing things like Big Little Lies, which is huge.
Mm-hmm.
And keeping... I know it sounds bad, but they're keeping themselves relevant on their own terms. And I think to have, like you said, for Sandra Bullock to position herself as Netflix's biggest A-list movie star is amazing on several different levels.
Yeah, it feels very strategic. It's clever. It's very, very clever. I'm all for it. But yeah, it feels well thought out.
She's not dumb.
No.
Yes, they do want to build a snowman. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
Two things from the Marvelverse. We know all the stuff that's coming for Phase 4, which is 2020 and 21.
Mm-hmm.
The last few days, there's been lots of chatter basically confirming that Ant-Man and the Wasp 3, which is not what the name will be because it was first Ant-Man and then Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yeah, so it can't be number 3.
So maybe this could be called Two Ant-Mans, Two Wasps, and maybe Stature, which is the daughter. Okay. I don't know. But yeah, that's going to be likely in 2022.
Okay, so we've got 2 years to wait for that one.
That's right. Peyton Reed, the director of the first two, is confirmed to be back.
Nice. So we've still got the same overall vibe.
Yes, and Michael Douglas today has confirmed that he is back involved.
Cool.
And that he expects to be filming, I believe he said January 21. We look at now is nearly a year and a half away, a year and a third away, but it'll come around pretty quick and we've got plenty of Marvel movies before then.
They'll keep us distracted.
And I think that one's got a lot of potential for more fun because the first one was a very family film. The second one expanded that family. And then the third one, because of the events of Endgame and this sort of stuff, the daughter is older
mm-hmm.
and has the chance to maybe become a hero as well.
Yeah.
And really just solidifies this as a family movie. Mm. Which is, I think that's really cool. The other one that I'm psyched for is April 8th, 2022 is Spider-Verse 2.
Nice.
Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse 2.
People were really, really happy that this news released. Yeah, this is, I would say, one of the most anticipated sequels.
I think so, because I have rewatched that movie so many times and it holds up.
Yeah? How many viewings do you reckon you're into now?
Probably, because Shay really likes to watch it, probably up around 12, 15, somewhere around there.
And still enjoyable.
Still loving it.
See, for a kid, that's a normal amount. For an adult, it's got to be something really good for you to be all right.
So many layers of stuff going on, and that's what I really appreciate. And you might not be as into the story this viewing, but you really enjoy the visuals, or you notice the jagged lines more. Or there's just so much to visually unpack. So I'm amped for this next one. I'm not sure whether it was fan art or what, but there's all these different looking logos flying around.
I've seen different stuff,
Of everyone's trying to work out, what does that Spider-Man? So one of them on there is definitely Spider-Man 2099, which is the future Spider-Man that we saw a flash of in the first one.
Makes sense that a bigger appearance would occur in the sequel.
And he was voiced by Oscar Isaac. I'm not sure if he'll definitely be back or whatever.
Yep.
One of the logos definitely looked like Spider-Punk.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a guy named Hobie Brown. He's in the proper Marvel universe. He's Prowler, which is he's a anti-hero vigilante type guy. Robs
Amazing.
From the rich to give to the poor.
Yeah.
And in this one, he's the guitarist in a punk band.
Yeah.
Who's Spider-Man, but like wears a ripped denim jacket and has a mohawk made out of spikes on the spider suit.
Is there a...
In the game?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
you
one
can
of the
wear the ski. Yeah, yeah, right.
And he's awesome. And he like uses his guitar as a weapon.
Oh, that's cool.
All this sort of stuff.
Yeah, that's fun.
So there's going to be some really fun other characters in the mix. I don't know if they will, but there was an Australian Spider-Man in the first Spider-Verse that they cut out.
Who do you reckon they'll get? If they're going to put this character in, which actor do you reckon will voice it?
I think it was meant to be Hemsworth.
Yeah, if they can't get that Hemsworth, they'll try one of the others.
But he, in the scene where they first all meet in the bunker underground and they're discussing what's happened to them of how they get to this Earth, he's the last one telling their story. And he explains that he arrived nearly 24 hours ago because of the time difference, and then drops dead halfway through his story, and that's when the rest all find out that they've got a day to get back to their dimension or they die.
Perfect. That was very clever.
So it's just, Struth, you guys, I've been here for nearly a bloody day and I can't get back. That's all it was going to be, something like that. So I'm really, like, the other one I'm very, very much hoping is Spider-Man, which is Spider-Man, which is Japanese 70s Spider-Man.
Nice.
That has nothing to do with Spider-Man other than kind of similar costume, but he like operates a giant like Voltron style robot.
Nice.
Leopleurodon.
There are so many visuals going on. I mean, there were in the first, but
Yeah. So if you can get wow, like Spider-Man. Everyone listening, if you've not seen Japanese Spider-Man, just jump on YouTube, type in Japanese Spider-Man, take 5 or 10 minutes and your life will be richer, I promise you.
And at least you'll be somewhat prepared potentially for the second.
Oh, yeah.
For the sequel.
He kills people.
Oh.
That's not meant to.
Not a thing. 8th of April, you said, what year? 2021?
2022.
2022. Oh,
these ones take a long time because they've got to animate it, then CG animate it, and then go back and draw on top
of it. All right. Oh, I guess we should give them some time. In the meantime, look, I did say that Sean Bean's cast in something.
You did.
And how long is he going to survive in it? So Snowpiercer, we remember it was a...
Oh, I love that movie.
Such a great movie. Was there a Korean original film, or was it directed by? Yeah, right. I wasn't sure if it was a remake.
I'm pretty sure it's Boone. Okay. Yeah. The guy who did The Host and Mother and Parasite this year.
Yeah, that's right. Look, if you haven't seen it, go and watch Snowpiercer and come back.
It's fantastic.
So that you can get excited for this show. Now, this show we already knew was going to be a thing. It's got Jennifer Connelly in it. It's for TNT over in the US.
They had massive posters everywhere at Comic-Con for it.
That's
even though it's not coming on screen anytime real soon.
No, not at all. There's going to be 12 episodes in the first series. Sean Bean's not in the first series. His name has been released as a a series regular. That's how they've introduced his character. But his character's in the second season, which hasn't even been made yet. First season hasn't even been on television yet. This is how much they are obviously invested in this show.
So a series regular is generally someone that you would consider, okay, if we're talking Walking Dead, Negan's first year, he was a series regular. He's someone who has been added to the cast but is generally a and Jeffrey Dean Morgan or with Jeffrey Dean Morgan. He comes after the original cast that have been there.
It's like your Heather Locklear special guest star.
Yes. So essentially everyone in the credits before then is quite often alphabetical order.
Mm-hmm.
And your people in your and with are your recurring a series regular. Then it moves to special guest starring, and that can also be recurring guest star.
Yep.
Which I believe last season Samantha Morton, like Alpha, mm-hmm. was a recurring guest star because added late in the season,
okay.
and then now she's a series regular.
It's very specific.
Very technical. But then, like over on Doom Patrol, Timothy Dalton is a series regular, but he doesn't necessarily appear in every episode, and his listing is with special appearance by Timothy Dalton. So there's a whole host of what that could mean. Of he might be a mysterious figure who pops up for the first six episodes for 30 seconds and then suddenly has an episode featured about him.
Just him, okay. Yeah. So with Sean Bean.
Mm. I mean, he's clearly going to be locked in the fancy end of the train, right? If that's why they're not going to seem to season 2.
Well, you would think so, right? Because we're going to know everybody else in the back of the train.
Hopefully by then. But it depends if this whole thing is, you know, if each episode of the week is moving through the next carriage, then it could take seasons to get to the front of the train.
Yeah, that's true. What if he is either a flashback?
Sure.
Or, I mean,
I'll say it. Maybe he's an astronaut. If they're going to find a way to get someone off that train who's been there before and everyone else is meant to be dead, then who's to say there's not astronauts left?
Where is he going to be? In percentage, what do you reckon his chances of surviving? He's very famous for dying in everything that he's in.
Minimal.
Yeah.
Minimal. I mean, we always think maybe this is the one where they surprise us, but it's not. It's not what you hire him for.
Exactly.
He dies well.
Because people are also, like, now I'm going to watch, I mean, I'm going to watch Snowpiercer anyway, but now I'm going to watch Snowpiercer waiting.
For him to die.
Yeah. So if they keep him on for
morbid.
Ages, I know. If they keep him on for ages, I'm not like talking like Ed Stark, like I'm talking proper, maybe even into the third series if they make one, and then they kill him.
Mm-hmm.
How big's that going to, but the headlines, they did it. Snowpiercer did it. Sean Bean chucks a Sean Bean and Snowpiercer.
Surely there's got to be a situation where maybe he's dying and can get his consciousness uploaded to the train.
That's good.
If you're going to twist, if you're going to twist the Sean Bean death, have him live on as an immortal AI
just
or something.
Just have him
like that.
There. Yeah. And he just says things every now and then.
In a Sean Beanie voice.
Yeah, of course. But I've got ages to wait for that because that show's not coming out till at least next year. Therefore, that's going to be 2021, Sean Bean.
It's going to be a while.
It's going to be ages. Mm. Any other news?
No, that's enough.
Got a watching suggestion? Email thewatcherspodcast@gmail.com.
All right, let's get into stuff that we've been watching. What have you been watching?
I'm going to tell you really quick this week because I don't think we need to dwell on too much stuff.
Okay.
It's been good.
Yep.
Don't get me wrong.
But
my first one, I could have put this in the news, but I thought this was too big for that. Billy on the Street is now on Netflix, 4 seasons.
People are very excited about this.
They should be. It's fantastic.
People have been binging it, and I think I'm going to be one of them.
You should. I have binged it at least 3 times the whole way through.
But how many years has it been going for?
I think it went off the air in 2017 and there were 3 seasons spread out over maybe 4.5 years on TV and then there were 2 seasons on internet before that.
Mm.
So
do we get the internet ones on the...
I believe the first season is the compilation of smooshing bits together
that's
of some
cool.
of those stuff, which is still really
totally
good.
Yeah, totally fine.
But, yeah, if you don't know this show, it stars Billy Eichner, who was most recently Timon in the Lion King movie.
And also he was in Friends from College.
Yes.
He played Fred Savage's partner.
He's great on American Horror Story. The last, I don't think he's in this year, the slasher one.
He might have been a bit busy.
Yeah.
He's been doing stuff.
But he had, I thought he was fantastic in Apocalypse and also really good in the, what was the political one? I can't even remember what American Horror Story that was called anymore.
There have been so many.
He played the psycho neighbor.
Like, we have to also remember that people like Lady Gaga were in...
Multiple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that feels like ages ago.
Uh-huh.
It probably was.
It's a thing. Anyway, he is a New York comedian, but on this show he basically runs around doing a game show in the street.
He just runs up to people. He's like, quick, answer these three questions.
Yeah. Answer correct for a dollar and then fires a question at you. And if you get it right, he gives you a dollar and then screams at you and runs away. And it should not work. But it is glorious.
It's because of him.
It's 100% yeah. because of him. And slowly but surely more and more celebrities fall victim to his tricks.
Get on board.
And they all want to get involved.
Yeah.
And then he just – some of them he's really like fawns over. Like Sarah Jessica Parker, that episode is great. And
I haven't seen that one.
He's obsessed with Meryl Streep.
So but it's Meryl Streep, right? Yeah. I mean,
he doesn't have obsessed. Meryl Streep on. He just talks about her
just
all the time.
Just talks about her all the time. So it's like French and Saunders talking about Madonna all the time.
Yep.
There's no chance she's ever going to be on the show. Okay.
It's just one of those
things. I get you.
It's a running thing. Yeah, very much. And there's a lot of running jokes. Rachel Dratch from Saturday Night Live.
I like her.
I know you do. Debbie Downer.
Yeah, exactly.
She's a recurring character on the show.
Awesome.
And he has her on. He does these... stupid, really involved mazes. And it's
for no reason.
Yeah, but it's like, here, let's avoid the pitfalls of Beyonce's career. And it's a Beyonce's career obstacle course that he makes Rachel Dratch go through and have it's a poor
very
time.
Very funny.
Billy on the Street. Do yourself a favor. Check it out.
It's on Netflix.
It's really good.
I was watching a show that I actually don't know what made me start it, but it was on Netflix, Surviving R. Kelly. I always thought R. Kelly.
Yes. Lynn's watched that.
Yeah.
She said it's a tough go.
I didn't get through it all.
Yeah.
In fact, after the first episode, I went, I don't know if I want to watch all of this.
Had he peed on anyone yet?
No. He did days. That a few episodes after that, but... It's basically just interviewing women who have had moments in time, whether they were underage or not, with R. Kelly.
Mm.
And they are not painting him in a good light because I don't think there's a light that you could paint him in that would make him look good. He always had, like, my first memory of him was, no, it wouldn't have been Ignition. It would have been I Believe I Can Fly, that song.
I was going to say, he's tarnished Space Jam a bit for everyone, which I hold against him.
But one thing that was in it's not one documentary, it's a series. So it's a series documentary where they were talking about the fact that he has tarnished not only that movie but that song. I think it was John Legend was saying people had that song at their graduation. People sing that song at church. You know, it's at little kids' end-of-year concerts. They're singing that song. It's like what he did has tarnished people's back catalogues and memories.
So he's tarnished those great moments with a beautiful song, and then he's also tarnished a lot of stripper routines because you can't play Bump and Grind anymore, and that is one sexy damn song. That used to be my I'm getting ready for the mood. I'm going to sing that a bit loud at you.
Yeah, right, okay. Yeah,
you know?
Right.
You can't
do
anymore.
That. And Ignition, like how many people had that song at their 21st for like – a solid 2 years.
Popping fresh out the kitchen.
Man, it was on everybody's mixed CD. It's just intense.
It's the freaking weekend, baby. About to have me some fun.
But that whole, and they talked about it, the whole fact that he was married to Aaliyah when she was really super young.
Yep.
And that nobody was like, hold on, this is wrong. We need to get we need to be outraged because this is legitimate reason to be outraged. It was all like, huh, I think he was married to Aaliyah. Anyway, Ignition's a great song, right? It was very much of the time and he was able to get away with so much. And some of those girls who are now women, their time with him changed them for the worst. And I love the fact that they called them survivors and not victims. I thought it was really empowering. But even like his wife, not Aaliyah, but he's a, she was an adult, and he, wow, I don't think I can get through the whole season.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've probably only watched half, but it's eye opening.
Sure.
And you know that he's not the only person, because we've seen other people like Harvey Weinstein go through this. Your Bill Cosby.
He got such a serve on South Park this week. For Halloween, Randy and Towley created a new super strain of weed and smoked too much of it, and were being hunted by all the things they've killed this season, trying to make their weed business bigger.
Oh, yeah.
And Randy calls the police for assistance. He's like, help, help, there's zombies, there's all these things. Oh, my God. Oh, my God, it's Harvey Weinstein. Harvey, what are you doing? No, don't rape me. Don't rape me, Harvey. Harvey, don't rape me. And then he wakes up at the end of the episode and he's like, oh, I think I smoked too much.
I think I hallucinated. Might have.
And then pulls a used condom out of the back of his pants and says, maybe I didn't, and like flings it onto the wall. And it's horrible.
It's horrible, but you know that those guys are making that so fast. How many days does it take them to make an episode?
Six. And so the stuff that Harvey Weinstein going to a bar last weekend was 3 days before the episode went away.
So that's...
Yeah. So they've added something very quick.
Very, very clever. Look, Surviving R. Kelly, if... I don't know if everybody would be able to get through it, but if you're interested to see exactly what this man was like, it's there for you to watch.
Sure.
Become a watcher on Facebook. Facebook.com/WeAreTheWatchers.
I'm going to go on the flip side of that hip-hop denouement, and I'm going to bring in... So I know I've mentioned maybe once or twice already hip-hop songs that shook America.
Mm. So they choose either different artists or times.
Yeah, so it's the show on AMC of all places, which is why I want to give it a bit of a plug, because this is not the sort of network you would expect the show to come from, but it's a really good documentary series, and I think it's based on something called the Rap Yearbook or something like that, which was a collection put together of the most influential song of each year from hip-hop. Now, the first episode, which I think I talked about and quite enjoyed, was Kanye's Jesus Walks from 2004. And that was kind of all about how intelligent rap came in, or, you know, personal rap, talking about experiences rather than just talking about the club. That was good. I enjoyed that. That is not the episode they should have led with. They clearly did that because Kanye's such a big star and they timed it with his new album coming and all blah, blah, blah. The three episodes since have been fantastic.
So who have they looked at?
So the first one was Kendrick Lamar's All Right, which was, I believe, 2016, might have even been 15, somewhere around there. But it was a whole episode about how music has been linked to, in this instance, Black Lives Matter, but the way that there's, every time there's been a civil rights movement, some sort of music has risen up to become the anthem of that time.
Hmm.
And it was kind of the way that Kendrick Lamar intentionally but also kind of unintentionally brought back the spirit of Public Enemy and that sort of fight the power, which wasn't what people were talking about. And he gave people hope during the Black Lives Matter and, you know, unintentionally created an anthem and made himself stand out. So it was that was really interesting from a political standpoint. The next one was Run DMC, and you'd think it would be Walk This Way.
What did they go for?
So it was.
Walk This Way was originally an Aerosmith song that then Run DMC decided to sample, but they actually got Aerosmith in.
Yes. So this was part of the thing with it was all about how these guys inadvertently created the rap rock movement or created that idea of hybrid. So they instead focused on Rock Box, which was the first of their songs that they did that way. And it's very closely based around Billy Squier's big beat that love the big beat. Great song, awesome drums, really, really iconic. And it's been used across a bunch of different people. Dizzy Rascal used it for a song, all this sort of thing. But this episode was partly about sampling culture, but more about how these guys at a really young age broke down some massive racial boundaries with the music by using rock and also giving full credit to their producer, who instead of just sampling stuff would have bands come in and recreate live. And that gave it a richer, more meaty rock sound rather than just singing over
and
the
authentic
song.
And authentic.
Very much so. But like, I learned a lot of interesting stuff of like, because they wore so much Adidas got real tight with Run DMC and MTV refused to play Run DMC. And they at the time, they didn't play any black artists.
Really?
Yeah. And so it was a big fight to get Michael Jackson onto MTV. And then Run DMC were the first hip-hop group to get put on there, and Adidas fully supported and pushed on there. I was like, hey, your audience buys our stuff. If we tell them no, that, you know, that MTV won't play.
That's
a big deal for us. So it was, I don't know, it was this really cool deep dive look on the way that corporations kind of forced another corporation to grow the fuck up. It was really interesting to watch.
That sounds
it.
Interesting. There's a lot of music history in that episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the one yesterday, which was, it was so good. It was exactly what I wanted, was Outkast with Elevators, which is a song from 1996.
Were they around that long ago?
So they first hit in 94 with Players Ball.
See, my first introduction to them was Miss Jackson.
Miss Jackson.
Sorry, Miss Jackson.
And see, that was the entire point of this episode.
For real.
This was an episode about how Southern rap snuck up in the 90s when the East and West Coast were too busy bullshitting each other and playing big. And the South snuck in from nowhere and just went, fuck y'all. And yeah, of how these guys.
So where are they from?
So they're from Atlanta, ATL.
Ah, right.
So that's why they refer to themselves as Atlians.
Okay.
And it has a very distinct style. And they actually talk about this a lot of people refer to music from the South. They think country and this sort of stuff.
Mm.
But they have, regions have very different things. So Miami is very famous for having bass, very fast bass music for strip clubs.
Ah.
Houston, on the other hand, like Texas, is they drink codeine and it's all about slowing down. And
oh, is that
crunk.
The syrup?
That's where you crunk and all this sort of stuff comes from. Atlanta is exactly halfway in between the two. So it's got the bouncy speed mixed with the drag. And so it creates.
It shouldn't work.
It shouldn't work, but it creates these really out there sounds and
so,
stuff.
So I don't know if this is in the show or not, but I'm just intrigued because I haven't heard of Outkast doing anything recently.
So they split up in about 2006. They occasionally come back together to do one-off gigs. They did Splendor in the Grass a couple of years ago.
Yeah, right, okay.
But Big Boy continues to make music all the time. Andre 3000 pops up on other people's stuff and produces things. But
he's got a kid called Seven. I'll never forget that.
He's a weird cat, and that's what this thing's about. He's got too much confidence.
Right.
But yeah, it was when these guys won a Source Award for their first album, Southern Player Catalytic. I can't even pronounce it. It's a really long name. But they won a Source Award, which is the equivalent of Grammy for Album of the Year.
Yeah, right.
And the audience of all their peers from the East and West Coast booed them.
Ooh, okay.
When they walked
Sore
up,
losers.
Booed them. Of like, you're not real rappers, you're a novelty, this sort of stuff. And Andre stood up there and said, I guess the South's the South's going to be heard now.
Mm.
And like made of this huge rallying cry. And then they came back. And every album since then has been progressively, like seismically better than the one that came before.
Mm.
And it talks about how they didn't have a chip on their shoulder until they went to be congratulated by everyone else for winning and everyone turned on them. And it just hardened them to become lyrical killers.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So this show.
What's it called again?
Hip-hop Songs that Shook America. Hmm. And it's on AMC of all damn places.
Yeah, it's the walking home of the Walking Dead.
Yep.
They're the Muggles, still waiting on their acceptance letter to Hogwarts. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
I reckon we get into The Walking Dead and Good Place now, and then we'll do the quiz, which will be a gaming quiz. What did we do last week first? Let's do The Good Place first.
Sure, let's do it, Brent.
I told you he's one of my favorite characters, and he continues to be. I love the fact that he was playing golf with the auto-aim or whatever he called it, assisted.
Yep, auto-assist, whatever. God-assist or something, yeah.
That was brilliant.
I might be in the minority here, but I felt bad for Brent because he reacted so poorly to being mocked. As he said, I accomplished something.
He wrote a book.
And if you listen to every other story he's told, he didn't accomplish anything. He lucked into everything. So he maybe never tried in his entire life. And so him sitting down and writing that book is the equivalent of Tahani not wanting to host a party. Or
not name dropping.
Yeah. I've, like, he went about it the wrong way, yes. And he's entitled and he should have apologized, all this sort of stuff. But
yeah,
that was personal growth for that guy in his own way. And the rest of them all ridiculed him for it.
It was one of those situations that you witness in real life where there's someone who is coming about things completely the wrong way and they have no idea that what they're doing and how they're doing it is rubbing people the wrong way, is inappropriate. Yeah. They have no idea, and it's a really hard, like it's like hitting a brick wall for them. It's shocking.
And it's like they don't have frame of reference that what they're doing is wrong.
They've got no idea.
To them, what they're doing is not wrong. It's
like you said, where are my compos? Wrote a book. The mystery, the murder mystery was solved on page 10.
Best detective ever. What was his name? Chip?
Yeah, it was Chip something. He was many things, including the president of the United States of America and I think the quarterback.
And the strong, yeah, it was the strongest president.
Now,
and the thing, I looked into it, the whatever, I can't remember what team he was the quarterback for, but they are a very B-grade team.
Oh, right, okay.
So it was meant to be that even in his dream, he's not achieving the top.
Did you like the fact that he was Tom Cruise in Top Gun on the back of his book?
Yep.
Why is he in a fighter jet? Because he likes Tom Cruise.
Yeah. Igby didn't like it.
Igby didn't like it at all. I'm really, really intrigued with what Michael has done to that bad Janet.
Sure.
I don't know.
She had some doubt as she was going back.
Yeah.
I think he's infected her.
I think he has too.
I think it's that ripple we've talked about.
Yeah.
She's going back with the book.
She's going back with the book, having been there for 6 months, clearly with Michael going in all the time. And also she's going back to a place where, with Glenn there as well, yeah. I mean, he's goo at the moment, but, or he may have. So there's potentially two people that Michael has influenced or changed or thrown that seed of doubt in their mind who are now in the bad place.
It could all have just been a story. It was all flashback.
That's true.
And it was Michael telling a story, and we know he's not always the most reliable narrator.
Good point.
So there could be some twisting. The other thing that I thought was really cool. So I don't know what's happening with Simone. She seems like a lost cause.
Her accent is getting more English by the day.
It is.
I know the actress is English, but
she's slipping that Aussie. It's losing.
Yeah.
I felt like she was almost just as bad as Brent because she, like, I get that you don't
quick to judge,
keep to apologize and all this sort of stuff. That's right. But you have to find a medium ground. You have to work with other people. So I don't know what's happening there.
She is almost a lost cause at the moment, maybe because we're focusing on a couple of the others more.
But I just think she is the one coming in that we had the highest hopes, so it should be easy.
Yeah,
and
that's
she's proven
true.
A real issue.
That's true.
Brent accomplished something this week.
Yeah.
And John kept a secret. So while our original cockroaches aren't having the best time, and maybe, like, if what Michael says at the end, that whole choosing to continue to help other people, that's a big improvement on their part. But even though the experiment is fraying at the edges, it's working. John is a better person, like categorically. He kept someone else's secret that, you know, he doesn't know that it's not a secret here.
Yeah, of course. But also Chidi, I mean, I know that he's not, but he is part of the, he is part of it.
He is, yeah.
He was dancing with Jason for no apparent reason.
He punched Brent out.
He did too.
That's the biggest decisive thing he's ever done. This is what I'm saying. Like, as much as everyone looking at the experiment is like, the experiment's not working, it's really working. Mm. And I think Tahani, what she said a few weeks ago of we have to find a way for these people to enjoy personal improvement is right. It's not going to be let's force these people to be better. It's going to be let's show these people how to better themselves.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what's happening.
What's happening.
And I'm really enjoying
whether
that.
Whether it's intentional or not.
Yeah.
Showing, shibby, and somebody stop me. You're listening to We Are The Watchers.
Okay. Walking Dead.
Mm.
I think I want to first speak about Ezekiel and his
goiter.
Yeah.
Is it a goiter or is it a lymph?
It looks like it's a bit of lymphoma.
Mm.
He said that it ran in his family and that it was easily treatable. But of course, they're in a zombie apocalypse where things are not as easily treatable. Mm. And I think that I think that the Ezekiel we saw, was it last episode or the episode before with Michonne? I think that that Ezekiel was the Ezekiel reacting to the lump.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. It's not about Carol anymore.
No, it's not about Carol.
I think the dude's a ghost. He's just been – he's pretty much been dumped on since we first met him. Mm. Like, he was at such a high point. He had a kingdom.
He had a tiger.
He had a tiger. He had a – he won a wife. Mm-hmm. He still got Jerry. Man, what's Jerry going to do?
I can see Jerry stepping up. Not that he has to replace Ezekiel because Ezekiel's not a leader anymore, but I can see – okay, this is what I can say. I am predicting Ezekiel knows he's going to die from this lymphoma and will go and sacrifice himself for the greater good, for the group. And I think Jerry's reaction to that will be, I'm now going to help lead whatever community or this whole community towards this goal now.
Yep.
So I think he'll be a driving force behind whatever Jerry's storyline is next.
Yeah, I don't know if he'll become a leader full out, but he'll always be a protector. And I kind of like that role for him.
Yeah, there's also no group that he has to lead at the moment. Aaron, what's he doing?
He's flip-flopping character traits every week, isn't he? Last week, let's charge in all guns blazing. This week, I might stand here and peep at you through a bush. Let's be friends. Have my bandage. So...
He's being used for plot points. Mm-hmm. Yeah, unfortunately at the moment. But look, he's still got his amazing fake arms. So.
Oh, look, do you think that that woman's hand will get infected at some point, need to be removed, and in order for them to come closer, she gets a metal arm?
Well, she did cut it whilst cutting zombie guts. So there's zombie blood in her. I mean, I know that everyone's infected in the first place, but if we remember in the first few seasons, if you got some zombie guts on you or blood, sorry.
Yeah, if it mixed with your blood.
Yeah, you died faster than a natural death. Yeah, maybe. That'd be really cool. And then they could hold metal arm to metal arm.
Iron people, high five.
Quing.
They could get some cool shield wall maneuvers.
Oh, shield wall. Whatever happened to the shield wall? What, they haven't even done their shield fights yet. Oh, it's probably for the war, but waiting.
Look, we could say it. This was a filler episode. There were some great moments in there, some stuff that made me chuckle, a few good bits, but, you know, we're clearly ramping back up to some action.
It was also about Negan.
Yes.
It was a lot good. About Negan.
That was good. A lot of it was good. Not all of it.
Which bits did you not like?
They telegraphed very early that kid was going to be a psycho.
Yeah. He was annoying from the first minute or two.
Yes. And look, okay.
Anybody who fanboys Negan in that world is not right.
That's right. We have talked about where I think things are going with Negan. And I think for show Negan, this was an important episode because they needed to show that he can slip back into the persona of Negan when he needs to, but he does not want to.
But he's changed.
Yes. So now he's almost going to use Negan as a heroic weapon.
Yes.
Or, you know.
It's a mask now where the Whisperers wear zombie masks. Negan is wearing the Negan mask.
That's right. And I don't think it was until he bashed that kid's head in that he got the Negan smile.
Yeah.
That was there at that end. All right, you big fucker, let's do it. Like that. I don't think that came back until part of it was woken up. But I think it goes away again. I think he wants to take that jacket off and doesn't want to be that person.
I don't think he wants to either.
I think he wants
He's doing it for the job.
Yeah, he just wants to go and nut tap newfound kids.
Is that a conversation that he has with anybody in the comic? Because it really sounds like, to me, it felt like it was something from the comics that they had to water down a little bit.
There were conversations like that with
Carl. Okay.
Maybe not specifically that, but yeah, that's how he spoke with Carl.
Yeah, okay. Anybody else we need to talk about for that episode? I don't think so.
Do you reckon Kelly, I think it's Kelly, is going to go deaf? Or are they just going to keep milking this for a while?
No, I hope. Look, if she goes deaf, that's two deaf characters who are taking on the Whisperers.
So she got touched by a Whisperer at the start, right? When she was knocked out and that one was coming for her and then it smashed to the opening credits. That was a Whisperer.
I thought so.
To Brush, right? Do you reckon that whisperer tailed along to where they had been stealing all those supplies and the whisperers are going to nick all that gear?
Yeah.
Potentially.
Why not? I would if I was
mess
a whisperer.
With them further.
Yeah, exactly. They're basically making the whisperers messing with the community's job easier.
Yeah. Nicks.
That's easier. All right, that'll be it for The Walking Dead for this week. Let's get into the quiz.
Bruh, bruh.
Games edition. Got six game questions for you.
All right, six game questions. Let me turn off all distractions.
Mm-hmm. What does JRPG stand for?
Japanese role-playing game.
Nice one.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I know what an RPG is. And I was like, is it junior or Japanese?
Japanese, absolutely. How are Mario and Luigi related?
Well, they're brothers.
How brothers, that's right. It could have been cousins.
They're plumber brothers.
They're plumber brothers.
Well,
who's
Wario,
the older?
Wario is the cousin, and Waluigi is his, I don't know if it's brother or...
Mario would be older.
Mario's
he?
Older. Yeah, because he's Bob Hoskins.
And of course.
Luigi is.
Is much younger.
The Guise.
That's right. What is the upcoming TV show that's based on a game that's based on books?
That would be The Witcher. You've got a poster of that above your bed.
Yeah. The Witcher. Do you know what I think is odd? Is that the showrunner for The Witcher, which is going to be on Netflix. Feels confident that they've got enough for seven series. Netflix are not, that's not a Netflix thing.
He must
thing.
Be holding a really good hand of Gwent if he's going to bet that hard.
That's right. Good one. Very good.
I'm literally dancing.
that was a good reference.
Thanks.
I loved Gwent.
I know you do.
When I haven't played the actual standalone, but.
Oh, you haven't?
No.
Oh.
Should I?
I don't know.
Okay.
I clearly haven't.
Which Call of Duty game did Ice Cube appear in?
Ooh. All right. So it's not going to be any of the early ones because they wouldn't let Ice Cube fight in World War II. Sorry, World War I he wouldn't be allowed to fight. World War II he could. Modern Warfare 2? 3.
No, in between. Black Ops 1.
Oh,
so that was the one.
I knew it was that period.
Yeah, that was the one where it was.
70s? Is that the flashback one?
Yeah, Mason. What do the numbers mean?
Yeah,
Mason,
yeah. And he's strapped in the chair.
Yeah. Mm. So he played a character called Joseph Bowman in the campaign, but you also hear him in multiplayer. He says stuff like, stay focused, stay alive. We've taken the lead. Enemy took Bravo.
Does he ever say it was a good day?
No, he doesn't.
That's a real missed opportunity. If you're not going, if you have Ice Cube, you're gonna...
there might.
He's got to get to the end of a mission. He gets on the chopper and says, "I didn't even have to use my AK." That's all he's got to say.
Why didn't he? I can understand why he wouldn't have in the campaign if he's who I think he is. He didn't have much of an opportunity.
He dead man.
Yeah. Where's Tetris from? What country?
I thought you were going to say like the blocks.
No. Just what country was it
created?
I want
to say Japan.
No. It was created in 1984 by an artificial intelligence researcher who worked for the Soviet Academy of Sciences at the computer center in Moscow.
Oh, in Soviet?
Yeah.
Blocks solve you.
And until I think about 96, the government actually owned the rights to the game and then they gave it back to him.
Wow.
So, yeah, interesting story behind that.
I guess that's where the term Soviet bloc comes from.
Yeah, from Tetris, absolutely. Yeah. Final question. Name the three franchises Naughty Dog is famous for. Naughty Dog being the developer.
All right, Naughty Dog, they've done Last of Us.
Last of Us.
Uncharted.
Yep. I'll give you a clue. The other one's older. More cartoony.
Yeah, I'm flicking back.
If you played Uncharted 4, you would know because they literally put this game into Uncharted 4.
Not like Jack and Daxter or something.
It's very similar.
Ratchet and Clank.
Oh, you're very close.
Banjo-Kazooie.
I'm not even joking. You are so close. I'll give you the initials.
Mm-mm.
No?
Conker's Bad Fur Day. No. I'm just going through rare games.
Because you're...
GoldenEye, Perfect
No.
Door.
No. You said...
All the games around it. Spyro?
CB.
Oh, Crash Bandicoot. Of course.
See what I mean?
Yeah.
You were getting closer and closer every time.
I was so close. Yeah. But I was too focused on two character team ups.
Yeah, though, yeah.
I love a game where one character's in a backpack. I don't know why.
Yeah, fair enough.
Something where you're controlling two characters as one and they've each got individual things, but they can split. I like that.
I mean, that was sort of similar with Ellie and Joel in The Last of Us.
Very much so.
She was a little unhelpful in some times where you're like, you're literally standing in the way.
Oh, she took so long looking at that giraffe.
It's a giraffe, right? It's a beautiful thing. I understand. I'm going to get you that poster for Christmas.
Aww.
That's going to do it for this episode. Till next week, Tom, say something meaningful.
The cake is a lie.